I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. What began as a nasty bit of inside the Beltway political retribution now appears to be developing into an embarrassing scandal for the Bush administration. A former U.S. diplomat was sent to see if Iraq had tried to buy uranium from Niger. Joseph Wilson reported back that he found no such evidence. So when the president's team continued to use this mysterious uranium as part of its case to go to war, the diplomat spoke out. Well, once that happened, and this is where things get murky, it seems that a couple of people in the White House decided to teach this wayward diplomat a lesson. They started calling reporters, letting it be known that Wilson's wife was a CIA agent, and when that story was reported, her career was effectively over. This weekend, the story caught fire. It is, after all, a serious offense to rat out a CIA agent. The New York Senator, Democrat Charles Schumer, says he's been in Washington 22 years and he's never seen such a kneecapping. He and others are now calling for an independent investigation.
If the Justice Department does this investigation itself, the chain of command goes right up to John Ashcroft. He is very close to President Bush. Even if he were to do a thorough investigation, there'd be an appearance of a conflict and no one would have confidence that it was thorough.
Attorney General John Ashcroft has his people undertaking a criminal probe even as he resists calls to bring in an independent counsel.
The prosecutors and agents who are and will be handling this investigation are career professionals with extensive experience in handling matters involving sensitive national security information and with experience relating to investigations of unauthorized disclosures of such information.
On the political side, White House spokesman Scott McClellan says his boss, George Bush, has matters in hand.
The president has set high standards, the highest of standards, for people in his administration. He's made it very clear to people in his administration that he expects them to adhere to the highest standards of conduct. If anyone in this administration was involved in it, they would no longer be in this administration.
And the president, speaking out yesterday for the first time about the leak, invites people to volunteer what they know.
If anybody's got any information inside our administration or outside our administration, it'd be helpful if they came forward with the information so we can find out whether or not these allegations are true and get on about the business.
Connection listeners, what does this scandal tell you about dirty pool in Washington? What are the implications for intelligence, for news gathering, and for George Bush's administration? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And through this hour, we'll hear from a man who has worked as a senior investigator for the Senate Watergate Committee. We'll hear from a senior reporter who has studied and written about the inner workings of the CIA. But we thought we'd start today with one person who has lived through the experience of such a controversy, a breach of security, a secretive presidency, an unpopular war. 32 years ago, Daniel Ellsberg photocopied and leaked 7,000 pages of what became known as the Pentagon Papers, detailing the executive decision-making during the years of Vietnam. He was arrested and tried, and the case was dismissed. Daniel Ellsberg's joining us on the line from Santa Cruz, California. Welcome to The Connection.
Very good to be here. Thank you.
Mr. Ellsberg, you have been following the story of Ambassador Wilson, what appears to be a White House-directed attack on him and his wife, Valerie Plame. What's going through your mind as you watch this?
I'm reliving my own experience of 31 years ago and 29 years ago. It went on for a couple of years. John Wilson is standing exactly where I stood 30 years ago, which is in the crosshairs of an Oval Office and a White House, determined to punish him for having told the truth about White House lies, the most dangerous kind of unauthorized disclosure from the point of view of the White House. The other word for that's the official word for leak, an unauthorized disclosure, and a disclosure that had to be unauthorized because the president wasn't going to authorize the release of information that would give the lie to his own statements. That's what I'd been doing for a succession of presidents with the Pentagon Papers, and it's Joseph Wilson admirably did, very courageously and boldly did, by putting his own name to an op-ed piece that simply asserted that he was aware that information he had personally given to the White House contradicting the statements they were then making and later were, or that they were shortly to make and were then making just before a war, were false.
Do you make anything?
We were being lied into a war.
Do you make anything of the fact that in the case of the Pentagon Papers, you were dealing with a president and an unpopular war, and that in this case, Ambassador Wilson is dealing with the case that is being made for a war, which is also controversial?
Yes, of course, there is that connection, because I think that whereas people have given this president, an unwarranted benefit of the doubt for the last year. People want to believe their president is not lying to them, and they particularly want to believe that a war that he's led us into with great personal leadership against great opposition in this country and abroad, they want to believe that that war was just and successful and worthwhile. It wasn't, actually. And that means that he's been following a policy that's depended on lies, depended on secrets, and it meant that the president's policy has been vulnerable, I would say, to a truth-teller at every step of the way. And Joseph Wilson is one of those who did step forward and provided an example that obviously this White House is very afraid will be followed by others. I hope it will be followed by others. But they set out to intimidate him and to intimidate these others and to show what can happen to you. In my case, I was put on trial facing 12 felony counts, but they were still worried 115 years in prison. We know from the tapes now that the White House remained very concerned that I would put out more information about their own administration, which I was prepared to do.
See,
to stop that, they started a team under the White House, former CIA agents and officials, called the Plumbers, to stop leaks. And their purpose was to stop leaks by any means necessary, including criminal means, and they proceeded to carry out crimes, things that were crimes at that time, and things that are still crimes, to intimidate me and to intimidate others.
But Mr.
Obviously,
Ellsberg,
this is happening now.
There's a difference here that I want you to address for us, and that is that in the case of the Pentagon Papers, looking at it now with the value of hindsight, we can say that was a leak that was put out there for the public good. In the case of the story we're following in Washington now, albeit still trying to make sense of exactly what's true and what's not, you could make the case that this is a leak that's not put out there for the public good, but one that simply got an ambassador's wife in some difficulty in her role as a CIA agent. Does that mean everything's reversed here?
Not really, because both kinds of leaks occurred at that time, and let me be very clear here. Joseph Wilson's revelation in the op-ed piece of his role officially for the CIA, he was a retired official sent over to do CIA work, he was revealing something that undoubtedly was and still is classified, and that deserved to be revealed at that point. It showed that the president, I say, was still lying to us, just as the Pentagon Papers. The public deserved to know those. In other words, that was an unauthorized disclosure that I think served the public good, and that's why he did it, undoubtedly realizing that he was taking a risk by doing so, though not perhaps realizing that his wife would suffer for that. And that was true, of course, in my case. At the same time, an administration which claims, of course, that all leaks are bad in principle, only authorized disclosures can be made, so forth, according to the rules, like all administrations, leaks when it serves their purposes. Not all those leaks are criminal. In this case, the leak of the name of Valerie Plame, his wife, as an undercover CIA agent, and we can assume that's what did happen because the CIA has set legal process in motion and it wouldn't have done so otherwise. That leak was a clear crime. In a way, by the way, it so happens that neither Joseph Wilson's disclosure nor mine was a clear-cut crime because we don't have an official Secrets Act covering all classified information or covering what we put out. But the release of this information is a clear-cut domestic crime under the Intelligence Identities Protection Act passed in 1982. So a crime has been committed here. And the parallel that says to me, which is pretty unusual, it doesn't happen every day, is that the White House has been led, someone in the White House, we don't yet know who, has been led undoubtedly, I would say, from my own experience in this, at very high-level direction, whether it's Karl Rove or whether it's the president himself, as in the case of Nixon, has been led to use criminal means to punish someone who told the truth that he didn't want told. In short,
Mr. Ellsberg,
the plumbers are back.
The plumbers are back. Mr. Ellsberg, let me just ask you to pause for a minute. I want to bring Scott Armstrong into the conversation. He's joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Scott Armstrong is an investigative journalist, executive director of the Information Trust, and perhaps most pointedly for the purposes of this conversation, he was also a senior investigator for the Senate Watergate Committee. Scott, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm interested in knowing whether or not you see this, as Daniel Ellsberg does, as a clear crime, as something which goes, you know, perhaps all the way to the Oval Office.
Well, I think this is a much more complicated tableau of events that we, in order to deconstruct it, we have to go back a little bit. The what rings true from Dan's point of view is the poignancy of what's happened here and the effort of a large institution, the United States government, to intimidate a single individual who is speaking out. That's clearly resonates. But we have to go back to the just a little bit of history on this. In February of 2002, the CIA and the State Department got a series of reports that had come in through the Italian government. Some passed through the British and some apparently directly to them, saying that the country of Niger was being approached by the Iraqis and there was some attempt to buy uranium, yellow cake, for the purpose of eventual use in nuclear weapons. These stories and tales about things like that are happen almost on a weekly basis. This one, because it came in from some foreign intelligence agents, got treated a little bit more seriously. And a former diplomat, this fellow Joe Wilson, who was uniquely qualified to go check it out. He was an Africanist. He'd served throughout Africa. He was the person during the Clinton administration at the NSC that organized Clinton's trip to Africa. He was probably one of the best known American diplomats, by this point, a former diplomat, in Africa, and he'd served in the country of Niger. He also had been, by coincidence, the DCM, the Deputy Chief of Mission, and acting ambassador in Iraq at the time that the first Gulf War occurred. He's the last American official to have talked directly to Saddam Hussein. So he knew Iraq. So he was the logical person to send, and he was sent on an informal business trip. I'm not sure that the trip itself they classified, because I think they wanted this to be done casually. He checked around and came back and said, no, this is the documents are forged. This is a preposterous story. The person signing the document wasn't in power at the time. The stationery is wrong, et cetera, et cetera. And while Iraq may be interested in acquiring such things, this is not a viable reason to think that they are. That came back and was absorbed at relatively routine levels inside the CIA and really didn't surface again until September of that year, 2002, when the British published a report citing this particular set of what we now know are forged documents as if they were genuine. At that time, I think there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing in the CIA saying, well, wait a minute, that's not right. I hope everybody understands that's not right. It's a little unclear what information got to whom, but the next thing we know is that it appeared in the president's State of the Union address. The president cited the British. Even though these reports had been beaten back inside the government, somehow it got into that address.
Scott, I have to stop you there because we're taking a short break. We'll continue with our look at this unfolding scandal in Washington when we come back. And Connection listeners are interested in your thoughts on this. Are you looking at it from the perspective of journalism, of political implications, or what it means for the intelligence community? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, a chance to review the facts and look ahead and see where we are in the anatomy of this scandal in Washington involving the reported White House naming of a CIA agent, implications not just for the administration but for intelligence. For journalist Daniel Ellsberg is with us. His name is certainly well known to us for his involvement with the Pentagon Papers back in the late 1960s, early 1970s. Scott Armstrong, former senior investigator for the Senate Watergate Committee, is also with us. Scott, I just wonder if you can sum up your point about why you see this as perhaps too complicated to be pointing fingers at this point.
Well, what happened was after the president's speech in the State of the Union mentioned this British intelligence report, the State Department had published something in December and had acknowledged that they were wrong about Niger internally, but the president made this reference. That became part of the drumbeat that led to going to war. And as that beat picked up on March 21st, right at the beginning of the war period, it became a question where the Congress raised it publicly and said, we don't think this report is right. What's going on? That became an embarrassment to the administration. It got buried by the war. And then in the summer of this last year, Walter Pincus of the Washington Post published the fact that there was a diplomat who'd gone and proven that this information was false. About 2 weeks later, the diplomat, Joe Wilson, printed an article that said, yes, I was there. Here's what I did. I know that the vice president of the United States knew about it. I know that this information is false and that it got up to people up the ladder. This was very embarrassing to the administration. It proved that they were using false information to advocate the war. At that point, someone went to Robert Novak and other journalists and said, well, this guy Wilson, it's not so clear. There might be other information. The implication was he was politically motivated. But the main thrust was, well, this happened because his wife worked for the CIA and she was involved in weapons of mass destruction. And her name, Valerie Plame, was put into the article. That effectively ended her ability to operate as a covert operator, although I don't think she was intending to go back and do covert things. In fact, the fact that she'd once done covert things for the CIA is protected. That's classified information. It may not be prosecutable under the Intelligence Identities Act, but it is, in fact, something that they want to pursue. George Tenet doesn't like those kind of leaks.
Let me stop you there if I can.
For this administration.
Because I want to bring Ted Gupp into the conversation. Ted has been sitting here in the studio with me patiently listening. I know you two are colleagues from Washington Post days. I'll tell our listeners that Ted's a veteran reporter, author of a book called The Book of Honor, Covert Lies and Classified Deaths at the CIA. He's currently a fellow at the Shorenstein Center for Press Politics and Public Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, where he's looking at press coverage of the CIA. Ted, tell me what you're thinking of the implications of this scandal from your particular area of expertise looking at the intelligence community. How serious is this?
I think it's too early to say with any certainty how serious it is, but I think it has the potential of being quite serious in a way that I think has been to some degree overlooked. I don't know if you've ever played the game Hearts, but if you pass someone the Queen of Spades, you may gloat momentarily thinking that you've stuck your opponent. Unless, of course, they're shooting the moon, and that may be the one card they're waiting to get. That may be what you're seeing politically now. That is, this is an administration which believes in a very tight control of information. And as embarrassed as they may be momentarily by this contretemps, in the long run, it may play very well into their hands. That is, what may happen is that someone may have to leave if they're identified as the source of this leak. On the other hand, it may legitimize efforts to seal other leaks. And leaks perform a very vital function in a democracy. They become more important the more tightly controlled information is. This administration, particularly Rumsfeld at Defense and Ashcroft at Justice, have a very tight rein on information. So what may happen as a result of this, and it would have security implications and implications for the CIA, is that in shutting this leak and prosecuting or at least going after this leak, what you may have is a legitimation of a real tightening of control over the flow of information.
Let me ask you if I can, though, to give me the benefit of your understanding of whether or not we should look at this as some in the administration are saying, where Valerie Plame, the CIA agent, was a name that was well known. It was not a major break to put her name out there. And the others who are saying that it is a serious crime. It may have jeopardized the lives of people either in this country or other countries where she was posted with her husband. Do you know, based on what we have seen so far, how serious the outing of Valerie Plame is?
I can address it generically, and it will pertain to the case in point, even if we don't have the specifics. That is, There is one line that is generally not crossed, and that's the outing of an active covert operative. I wrote a book in which I identified 35 covert operatives. They were all dead. There was a 36th I did not identify because tenant of the CIA asked me not to and provided information which substantiated his reasons. Most journalists are loath to do that because it not only exposes the operative to potential bodily harm or death, mm-hmm. but it compromises all of the people that provided them information and the methods by which they collected intelligence. My understanding, and this is thinly reported at this point, is that Valerie Plame was probably not active in the covert ranks. For one thing, it's very difficult for the wife of an ambassador to maintain a covert existence. It would be almost impossible to operate, and her specialty was nonproliferation, and it would be very difficult for her to do so in countries in which he was an ambassador because of the potential for major diplomatic embarrassment. So if she maintained that covert activity, it probably was done in countries other than where he was an ambassador or a deputy chief of mission. They would keep that separate.
Daniel Ellsberg, you've been patient in waiting with us on the phone. I wonder if I can ask you just one last question. And
well,
again,
I'd like to comment on that last question if we could, but and then ask your other
okay, questions. Briefly, if you wouldn't mind. Go ahead.
Okay. The fact that the Justice Department is opening a full inquiry on the law at the request of the CIA, both the request and the response, indicate that both of them regard now that somebody has clearly, I would say, broken that law. They don't know who it is. The difference with revealing a currently covert, a still covert name, whether she is actively at this moment engaged in field activity, she may be doing analysis back in the CIA, but the fact is that her past networks could be rolled up with the knowledge that they had been dealing now with a covert CIA agent. So the covert identity is still definitely protected, so long as she maintains a covert identity, which appears to be the case, is still definitely protected by that law, and that means that the line they have crossed is not just a prudential line by journalists. It's a law. A law has been broken. And the analogy then to Watergate tells us a quite different scenario that may come from what you sketched, with all respect there. The analogy to Watergate indicates, and there aren't many analogies, this is one of the first in 30 years, I would say, where the White House has brought back White House plumbers engaged in breaking the law in order to intimidate a leaker. I can't think of an incident that I know of in between that's been proven. And the potential for that, not based on what has been done so far, but what they're about to do, I would guess, and it's a strong guess, in the way of cover-up and lies and obstruction of justice, obstruction of the FBI process, may bring this administration down, has real the potential for doing that, not just because of this one act, but because a legal process having been instituted. I don't believe that the senior administration officials, which these journalists cite, who are clearly in the White House, are going to be thrown over the side quickly or will go quietly any more than John Mitchell.
Daniel Ellsberg, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today. It was great to have you here.
Okay. If people want to know more about this, my website, ellsberg.net, is going to have the parts of my book that is just coming out now, Secrets, is going to have the parts that relate to what went on then.
And it may be
going on now.
And a note for our listeners that the book, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, is now out in paperback. We have a number of callers who are trying to get in, and I thank them also for their patience. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Providence, Rhode Island. John's joining us now. Hi, John.
Hello.
Tell me how you're regarding this.
Well, I just have an interesting article I found by Robert Novak, where this all started from. It's printed today, October 1st, on thetownhall.com. And he is coming back saying this was not a planned leak, which I think is one of the serious political implication that's going on here. And I want to just quickly read a few sentences. It says, first, I did not receive a planned leak. Second, the CIA never warned me that the disclosure of Wilson's wife working at the agency would endanger her or anyone else. Third, it was not much of a secret. Blah, blah, blah. During a long conversation with a senior administration official, I have asked why Wilson was assigned the mission to Niger. He said Wilson had been sent by the CIA's counterproliferation section at the suggestion of one of its employees, his wife. It was an offhand revelation from this official who is no
John, let me
start.
Let me stop you there. I mean, however Novak got his information, whether or not somebody phoned him or he happened to ask the question, it did come out, and it has not been denied that a number of reporters received telephone calls from White House sources, and that number of reporters is now a part of this. It's not just about.
Okay. Well, he's also claiming the same. The published report that someone in the White House failed to plant this story with six reporters and finally found me as a willing pawn is simply untrue. So I think that even that statement needs to be in question at this point.
Thanks for your call. I want to turn here to Ted.
Well, there are two points I'd like to make. One is Novak's statement that that he was in the context, this arose in the context of his asking questions, I think is almost utterly beside the point, because it doesn't matter who dropped the dime on whom, whether it was the White House called him or he went to the White House or wherever to ask for information. You know, the caller mentions that it was an offhand remark. There's no such thing as a casual or offhand remark when it comes to identifying a covert operative. It's clear it was deliberate. It's clear that it was calculated. So there's no defense here in terms of saying that it somehow slipped out or that the reporter was the one that dropped the dime and not the other way around.
Let me turn to Scott Armstrong here, Scott, because journalistically this gets very slippery. Who chose to reveal the name? Who chose not to reveal the name? How many reporters? I mean, we've had questions here about whether or not the reporters, in protecting their sources on this one, are in fact protecting people who may have committed a criminal act.
Well, this is part of a very elaborate game or system, which I mean, and Ted's described some of the dangers of it. The currency of democracy is information, and we have an open society where we discuss things and debate them, and we know a great deal. When you begin to put the imprimatur of secrecy on something, when you classify it, and people have to leak it to get it to you, it corrupts the system. It creates the possibility of counterfeit information getting there, which is what this original report that this is all about, this question of whether Niger was providing uranium to Iraq, was about. So when Novak is reporting on it, I think it is a fairly typical and routine thing to be talking to a senior official, and they say, oh, well, this is why we think Wilson was sent. Now, Novak did the right thing after he heard that. He called the CIA, and he talked to the person that you should talk to there when you're writing such a story, and he was told that that story was wrong, that someone else had dispatched Wilson, not his wife. And he was also told that it was probably a bad idea, if he chose to go with the story, to name the wife. When Novak wrote the story, he referred to her as an agency operative. He didn't call her an analyst, and she wasn't an analyst. And I don't think that it did create a great deal of present danger. She's not operating in a covert capacity, but it does unravel things retroactively. But this is the danger of when everything is classified. We have to have some sort of discussions. We have to have leaks. Reporters have to be prudent with what they use and how they use it and what they identify. He did the right thing up to the point of getting told that by the CIA, and then went ahead and put the name in anyway. He probably had to put the name in because there was really nothing else particularly new inside the story, and he was basically being told it wasn't correct. The problem comes now when an investigation occurs. They're going to have to investigate somebody for leaking to Novak. That's a crime. They're going to try and not investigate Novak because that's the current policy. The Attorney General has to personally authorize any subpoena of a reporter's records. But eventually, let's say they do identify the individual inside the White House or inside the administration that did this. That person's defense counsel is going to say, well, have you checked to see if Novak had other sources? Who are the other sources? Have you questioned Novak? Have you looked at his phone records? And in fact, they will then have to go investigate a reporter's records. And then we're into the era of the plumbers again, because we're going to have, not just for this leak, but as Ted points out, for all the other leaks, which the administration finds less palatable, we're going to have a gradual tightening as a result of this case. In other words, I think the administration thought this through when they said, yeah, let's investigate it. At worst, we have to dismiss one of our higher level people. Nobody's going to ever prosecute him because these are too difficult to prosecute. But it will shut people in the administration up.
Let's take another call from Savannah, Georgia. Randy's joining us on the phone. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My only comment is that leading up to the your guests and everything, everybody, they've already got the White House convicted of this. I mean, it's no one has any clue where this came from yet. It could be from the other side. How do we know it's not from the other side?
What do you mean the other side?
From the Democratic side. I mean, this thing has come up. I mean, I understand the secrecy has to be, you know, because I'm former military myself, and I understand the secrecy part needs to be, you know, they have to have their cover covered, but everybody's already got the White House convicted, and no one has a clue where this even came from yet.
Let me just comment there, because we can do this one quickly. Evan, in his report, Novak says that it was two senior administration officials. So you either believe him or you don't. And there's other evidence from a variety of other reporters that senior administration officials were talking about this subject. So I don't think there's any question whether they were in the White House or not. There's a different news story that says they were. But I think everyone admits that there were senior administration officials who advocated the war who were talking about this.
Although it's part of the questions, Ted, that people will be raising, the defense of, you know, where does it come from? How close to the White House were they? As long as those names remain unknown, then there's going to be a lot more written and said about it. And a lot more questions like Randy's raised about how this is being exploited politically.
Right. And the political component of this is the defining component. I mean, it goes again, into a larger context, which is the politicization of secrecy and national security issues. I mean, one of the major controversies in the Iraq War is whether intelligence was politicized to serve an agenda. Here again, we have secrecy used, in this case, not as a shield, but as a sword to try to discredit someone or fire a shot across the bow. So, you know, the real problem, I think, in the broadest context is how do we attempt to depoliticize issues of secrecy and national security? Because if you don't get independent intelligence and analysis and a respect for the system that operates as clean and free of politics as possible, then the system itself is corrupted.
We're going to talk when we come back after the break a little bit about the implications of having an intelligence service that is so politicized. It's something that Ted has spent some time thinking and writing about. Connection listeners, we're talking about the current scandal in Washington where an administration official is known to have or reported as leaking the name of a CIA agent to reporters, which was then published, and where this is all leading not only the administration but the way that the administration's been covered. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour, trying to make sense of all the stories coming out of Washington concerning the leak of the name of the CIA agent who was married to the ambassador who went to Africa to investigate the shipment of uranium, which apparently did not go to Iraq but was still reported by the presidency. 1-800-423-8255 to help us with your own sense of where we need to be focusing on this. I have with me in the studio Ted Gupp, author of The Book of Honor, Covert Lies and Classified Deaths at the CIA. And he's a former staff writer for the Washington Post and Time magazine. Scott Armstrong was a former senior investigator for the Senate Watergate Committee. He's founder of the National Security Archive, which provides journalists and others with government documentation. Let's go straight back to the phones to Newton, Massachusetts. And Cindy's joining us. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of talk about this for the last couple of days, and the thing that keeps running through my mind is that beyond the personal safety of outing this agent and anyone that she came in contact with, doesn't it compromise national security? I mean, even if it isn't anything she was working on now, something she might be working on in the future, or all the people that she came in contact with, all her contacts, if they're outed, something they might have been working on in the future. And, you know, for Robert Novak to publish it, isn't this very unpatriotic? I just keep thinking about national security and patriotism.
Let's ask Ted Gupp just about what the implications are for the intelligence community with this.
Well, I think I'd make two points. One is there is a bitter irony here that the person who is being discredited, I'm talking now about the ambassador and his wife, the two of them, that her specialty was nonproliferation, which was the reason, in a sense, we went to war with Iraq. So the idea of somehow disabling a covert operative who worked in the area of nonproliferation is a terribly bitter irony, given that that's why we went to war with Iraq. So whoever did breach this security had, I think, placed partisan interests above the agenda articulated by the president. The other point I would make is that leaks are a part of Washington life, but they're also very much a part of the CIA. The CIA on innumerable occasions has actually had internal strategy sessions on how to leak information, and they use it in a variety of different ways. For example, if they're coming under attack for stovepiping intel, for failing to provide or sharing intelligence with the FBI, they will leak things that may discredit the FBI to bolster their own public position. If they feel that an administration is coercing their analysts and they're trying to fend it off and protect their independence, they may leak information. So there are a lot of different reasons why even the CIA, which one would think of as the ultimate protector of secrecy, is inclined also to use what might be charitably called unauthorized disclosures.
But let me ask you, just to clarify for Cindy's sake and mine, the question about what the implications are for national security, because at this point, somewhere around the globe, somebody is meeting with a U.S. CIA agent and exchanging information. And I'm curious to know whether or not that person meeting with the agent will be thinking twice now about sharing that information if, as reported, the administration in Washington is willing to say, oh, that person is working undercover.
Right. You have the specific and you have the general. The general is that there is the potential for a chilling effect, that this story is going out worldwide, and there is the potential that foreign nationals who would report to covert operatives of the CIA or the U.S. intelligence community will be inhibited from coming forward for fear that they will be compromised as well. There's the specific risk that whatever the ambassador's wife, Valerie Plame, was involved in, could be compromised. And right now, the agency is conducting an internal review trying to assess what, if any, damage was done.
And, Scott, when you try to imagine how this is going to play out, is it going to be the question of the criminality of the leak or the morality of the leak that we'll watch in the Washington press?
Well, I think the Democrats have the interest in seeing the morality of the leak play out. They're going to pull on this threat as long as they can. The damage internally, I think the initial assessment is that she was having contact in her own name with officials of other countries. It's not a particularly great damage. They'd already kind of factored that in previously. It was an effort to intimidate Wilson. And since Wilson was the major critic, the person who brought back the information that was the first thing to truly discredit, we have to remember that Colin Powell used this information. State Department published it. The president mentioned it. The vice president mentioned it. Condoleezza Rice mentioned it explicitly. Rumsfeld mentioned it. Condoleezza Rice's number two mentioned it. Wolfowitz has mentioned it. All of these people spoke about information which they had every reason to believe or to know or should have known was false. So part of what will unravel here is an investigation of how this bad information got into the system in the first place. Congress knew this information was bad before we went to war. And the ultimate question, Ted's absolutely right about politicizing secrecy, the ultimate question here is why Congress didn't stand up and say, wait a minute, the information you're giving us about why we want to go to war is not holding up. They apparently felt they couldn't stop it at that moment, but they basically laid down until recently, at which point it's become an issue simply because Wilson spoke out and said he felt there was an attempt to intimidate him, as there was for Dan Ellsberg, to intimidate anybody who speaks out, and his wife was her career was affected in the process. So it became a vehicle for Congress to go back, reset the clock, and re-argue the fact that the administration fought the war, at least in the area of nuclear armaments and the possibility of Saddam having nuclear weapons, on a false basis and knew it was a false basis at the time.
All right, 1-800-423-8255 to Natick, Massachusetts. Samuel's joining us. Hi, Samuel.
Thank you very, very much for letting me in, as always. NPR is, in fact, a democracy at work, where any person, whether you have money or you don't, has the equal opportunity of, you know, sharing the views and that's facing the nation.
What's your view, Samuel?
Now, you know, blaming Novak is, in fact, in behavioral science, we call it blaming the victim, which is nonsense, garbage. He has the professional obligation to inform the public of what is going on. This, you know, foreign policy based on if you're not with us, you're against us. If you speak up, if you say, listen, well, this is right, but the means is wrong. Let's do it right. And then you become the enemy. You become a suspect. I think it's a cowboy, hopeless and irresponsible, at best, you know, foreign policy agenda. If, in fact, we can spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars investigating sex on Bill Clinton. I mean, sex, which is as bad as immoral as what he did may be. We spent, even in internet, the president of the United States was loaded on internet, telling because he had sex with an intern. Aha, but we have someone here who broke the law, I mean, criminal law of the nation, putting the nation at risk, putting the ambassador...
Let me interrupt you if I can, Samuel, because I just want one quick final comment from you, and that is whether or not you agree with Novak and the other journalists, right, to protect the names of those people who leaked the information.
Absolutely. Someone leaked it for the purpose of revenge.
I know. So should that person be named?
If it's not named, then what happens? The beat goes on. They're going to do it again and again and again. It's going to come out anyway. They have already made the decision to retaliate, and the retaliation is going to come out one way or the other.
Scott Armstrong, I can imagine that you're sitting there thinking about this and thinking that no, the person will not be named, that the reporters will go to jail before that happens, simply because that's the way Washington has to work.
Yeah, we have a system that basically works. Novak shouldn't have mentioned her name. Had he not mentioned her name, we wouldn't have this controversy. And if we start investigating every time there's a leak, every aspect of it, it's going to intimidate the flow. And then only the people that originally lied about this inside the United States government are going to be immune. They're not going to have any critics. No one's going to come forward. Where this ought to go is this ought to go into a full investigation of what did the administration know about this issue when they made the different statements that they made. Because if the president and others spoke falsely, knew that this information that they were putting out was not true, and used it as a basis for going to war, mm-hmm. that's a much more serious crime than someone leaking something about somebody's wife.
The thing is, though, that something has changed here, if I'm not mistaken. And I refer back to the case of David Kelly, whose name was leaked by aides to the Prime Minister of Britain. I know, Ted Gupp, you've talked about Stephen Hatfield, the person who was named by the Justice Department as the anthrax person of interest, that where what you have is elected governments naming people in situations that are almost certain to have them lose their reputation, lose their career. I don't know. Ted, is that new?
I'd like to say it is, but I don't think it is. I think that there does have to. I agree with Scott. I mean, I don't think that Novak should give up his source. I do think he should not have disclosed the name. That was the mistake. I guess I disagree with Scott in that if Novak had taken a pass, they would have found somebody base enough to run the name anyhow, if they were inclined to do it. And it sounds like they were searching pretty hard, if they indeed called six folks, as some accounts have it. But I do think that there should be some accountability here. I think that there's a broader issue, which is that there's a lot of pent-up frustration and emotion which is coming out in this issue. And part of it, I think, is a frustration that the American public does not seem more upwrought or distressed by what some take to be a fabrication of evidence for going to war. The big picture, which Scott is talking about, Scott says, we should examine this bigger picture mm-hmm. about the corruption of use of intelligence and the politicization of the analytical process. But the public does not seem to be taking to the streets over that. And I think that there are some who are frustrated by that and see this as a kind of, what is the expression, the camel's nose in the tent, a way to broaden the debate and get at that broader issue again. I'm not sure that will be productive.
But there's something, Scott, if I take the point that Ted's making, there's something depressing about the idea that the public may just expect this kind of behavior and may not be in high dudgeon because that's the way that they figure politics and the journalists who cover politics operate.
Well, I think there's a delay here in what filters down, and I think we've seen it more in Britain than we have here, where they had a full inquiry, where in fact the prime minister was interrogated, his notes were looked at, the notes of his principal aides, things we would never do in our system, were done there, even though they have an Official Secrets Act. They probed into it, and it was horribly embarrassing for them, because it showed again and again their attempt, and ultimately I think the BBC proved its case that the information was, as they call it, the sexed up in order to make it qualify as being severe enough to go to war. Well, I think this is a similar instance. It was a case of constant repetition of a point by people who had every reason to know it was false at the senior levels of the government. Now, if this is a convenient way to get back to that issue for politicians, that's fine, but they were elected for a purpose. They do have a role in the Constitution. They are supposed to stand up to the executive and interrogate it. Woodrow Wilson, before he became president, when he was a mere college professor, said that the interrogating role of Congress is more fundamental than even its legislative role. And they just don't do that anymore. There's not effective oversight. They allow the manipulation of classified information, of secrecy, to control them. And it's time that stopped.
Ted, tell me just briefly before the end of the program whether or not you think this will end up before an independent counsel, or will this die in some back corridor of the Justice Department?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. My guess is that it probably would not go to an independent counsel. I think that Ashcroft is going to probably dig in his heels. That would just be my guess.
And if he does that, Scott, is that the end of it, or can pressure build to change his mind?
No, there's a possibility of additional pressure, and it's in the Democrats' interest. I mean, I think Ashcroft may appoint an independent counsel just to get the Democrats off his back. The fact of the matter is the professionals inside the Justice Department are perfectly qualified to do it. An independent counsel or the professionals inside are going to come to the same conclusion. They're going to figure out very likely who did it, not be able to prove it, and they're going to be forced to face the question of do they want to then subpoena Novak, look at his records. They'll conclude they don't. The official will resign, and that'll be that. And then the Democrats will have to face the ultimate issue anyway.
Were they lied to, and
do they care?
We're out of time. Scott, thanks for being with us on the program today. Scott Armstrong, former senior investigator for the Senate Watergate Committee and executive director of the Information Trust. Ted Gupp, good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Ted, author of The Book of Honor, Covert Lives and Classified Deaths at the CIA, and fellow at the Shorenstein Center. Earlier in this hour, we talked with Daniel Ellsberg, who leaked Pentagon Papers in 1971. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.